Welcome to you today. I want to introduce the panel to you. To my right is Justice Mark Pittman, and to my left is Justice Dabney Basil. I'm Bonnie Sutter, the Chief Justice of the Court. It's my understanding the attorneys have checked in. If the clerk would please call the case.
The court will now call Griffin Park Residential Association Incorporated versus John Z. King. May it please the court, Ms. Kathy J. Dallas will argue for the appellant. Mr. John Thomas Hawkins will argue for the appellee.
May I proceed?
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Cassie Dallas. I'm here today on behalf of the Griffin Park Residential Association, which we refer to in our brief as Griffin Park, and I will refer to as Griffin Park for today's argument. I'm sure the court is familiar with the record and the facts of this case, but I want to briefly highlight and emphasize the timeline of events here. This case concerns an assessment lien that was included in part of a declaration of covenants that were recorded, created, and perfected in July of 2001. Mr. King purchased his East Park property in October of 2004 and some years later filed for bankruptcy on November 3rd, 2015. It is undisputed that after that date, before the end of the calendar year of 2015, Griffin Park set and sent out a notice of their annual 2016 assessments to the residents of Griffin Park, including Mr. King.
Is the notice of assessment in our record?
The notice of assessment is not in the record, and candidly, that is because my client could not locate the notice of assessment and was not put in the record another way. But it is undisputed that it was sent out after Mr. King had filed for bankruptcy.
Sometime between November 3rd and January 1st, right?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Yes, ma'am. Mr. King was discharged from bankruptcy in February 10th of 2016, and then several months later, in June of 2016, the association recorded a notice of assessment lien in the records, in the county records, and then filed an application for expedited foreclosure under Texas Rule of Civil Procedure 736 in September of 2016. That is after which time Mr. King filed the declaratory judgment action that brings us here. With those dates in mind, the issue before the court can be distilled down to one very simple one, despite all of our briefing, and that is this. Did Griffin Park act to enforce the assessment lien during the automatic stay? The answer to that question is no, and we know that for three reasons. First, we know that the 2016 assessment, the notice indicating the amount of the 2016 maintenance assessments, is a post-petition debt. And because of that, we know that it wasn't dischargeable in bankruptcy and was not subject to the automatic stay. We also know how property liens are enforced, and that is through affirmative actions on the property. And we know that Griffin Park didn't take any type of action to enforce the lien or any action on the property until after Mr. King had been discharged from bankruptcy. So going back to the first reason that we know Griffin Park didn't violate the stay. Why is it important that the 2016 assessment is a post-petition debt? Well, first of all, we know that the automatic stay, 11 U.S.C. 362, in particular subsection A4, which is the one at issue here, prohibits any act to create, perfect, or enforce any lien against the property of the estate. The notice of assessment is by itself not a lien. It's just a bill for the annual assessments. And the N. Ray Beter case cited in our brief, as well as the N. Ray Zamora case, pretty clearly state that sending a notice, sending a bill, post-petition, not a problem for a post-petition debt. And that is what the 2016 assessment was. It was for calendar year 2016, assessed in sometime after Mr. King filed for bankruptcy in late 2015, and that's that. In Ray Zamora and Henry Beater say post-petition debt, collecting on a post-petition debt is okay, sending a notice of a post-petition debt is okay. And we know that because of that, because the requesting or collecting on a post-petition debt doesn't violate the stay, it means it's not an act of enforcement.
Were there any, or at least any evidence of the record of any actions taken by the Homeowners Association to collect on the assessment, other than just merely sending the notice?
No, Your Honor. Other than sending the notice and then later filing the notice of lien after Mr. King was discharged from bankruptcy, there's no evidence of anybody knocking on Mr. King's door or prohibiting him from using the neighborhood pool. There's no evidence of any of that because none of that happened.
But I think the other side's argument is that 362A4 also references creation, and the sending of the notice of assessment under the declarations is basically a step in the creation of the lien under the declarations.
Your Honor, let me clarify that point. Because, no, the lien is created, the lien was created and perfected in 2001. And this actually sort of leads into my second point, so I'm going to answer your question by continuing on with my argument. The declaration explains how the lien is created and enforced. And it says that the lien was created upon recordation of this declaration. The nature of an assessment lien, and particularly an assessment lien that runs with the land as part of the covenants that are filed and recorded, is that it's there. It exists as long as the covenants are in force and effect. And
so sometimes the lien balance is zero?
Yes, Your Honor, precisely. Sometimes if there is no indebtedness on the property, then there's no the amount of the lien is zero. And then when there is a continuing indebtedness, it is automatically in the past, essentially, made part of that existing lien. The declaration further provides, and so I would say, Your Honor, that in terms of creation and perfection, to answer your question directly, I don't think that the appellees are suggesting that the lien was created during the automatic stay or even perfected during the automatic stay. It's my understanding, and it's how we briefed it, that the only real dispute has to do with enforcement. And so what the declaration says about enforcement is that...
But if notice is a necessary step to later file your assessment, your notice of assessment,
mm-hmm.
isn't that really the argument? It's that notice is part of the right to later... file your notice of assessment.
I think there's a distinction between sending out the bill, mm-hmm. And the terminology here I think makes things confusing. We call that a 2016 assessment. You're getting notice of what you owe for 2016. That's different from what the declaration requires with respect to filing the notice of assessment lien later on.
Do you have to do the first one first? Do you have to do that, the notice that you sent out sometime between the November 3rd and January 1st, does that have to be done? You have to give them notice of it before you can later file the notice of assessment of the lien filed?
Well, sure, in the sense that you don't owe something until you incur a debt. The association had to make the assessment for an assessment to become due.
Make the assessment and notify the debtor that they've made the assessment. No?
Yes, Your Honor, but I don't think that notifying the debtor under the declarations or under any existing case law of a post-petition debt can qualify in any sense of the word as an act of creation, perfection, or enforcement of the assessment lien. And hopefully I will further clarify.
I glean that's what they're arguing. I'll let them make their argument, but
sure, and I'm happy to respond in rebuttal to that point if it is made. So what the declaration provides with respect to enforcement is that the association file a notice of assessment lien and then institute and allows the association to institute an action at law against the owner and or foreclose on the property. In re Thurman, which we cited in our briefing, provides additional illumination into what an act of enforcement of a lien is. Now, in re Thurman is a tax lien case, and the case itself, the facts of the case involve automatic perfection under a statute. Again, I do not think that perfection, the timing of the perfection, is an issue here. What is an issue is how you go about enforcing the lien. So you do that, Thurman says, through affirmative enforcement actions, filing a lawsuit, foreclosure, filing a notice of list pendens. That's not an exhaustive list, but what you're seeing there is an action that gets at and gets after the security interest in the property. The only way for the association here to get at the security interest in the property is under the declaration to file a lawsuit against Mr. King or to foreclose on the property, which is what they did.
I don't want to turn this into a law school test, but I think Thurman turned primarily on Section 362B3 of the Bankruptcy Code. Now, does it have any application to this situation where a lien pre-exists the filing?
Your Honor, you will quickly reach the end of my bankruptcy knowledge if you start getting into the other provisions under the automatic stay. But to the extent that the facts are different in Thurman, I'm not saying that Thurman is binding precedent on this court. I'm saying that Thurman's explanation of how you enforce a lien is instructive here. You're not enforcing a lien, the assessment lien, by telling a debtor or telling a resident of your community, hey, 2016 assessments are due, pay or don't. You only enforce the lien, the assessment lien, by taking an action, a legal action, against the debtor. Well, that brings me to my third reason why we know that Griffin Park didn't violate the stay here. The only actions, and Mr. King concedes, the only actions in terms of filing and recording the notice of assessment lien and then proceeding with the enforcement action under 736 came long after he was discharged from bankruptcy and the stay was lifted. Because of that, the post-discharge enforcement actions, we know they can't violate the stay, and they're not void because Griffin Park sent a notice of assessment during the automatic stay. Zamora and Beter make clear that sending those notices, that's okay. It doesn't violate the stay. And in fact, I believe it's Beter that says you don't even need to seek relief from the stay to send a notice of a post-petition debt. That's what Griffin Park did. That action was not void, and it didn't void or implicate the later actions that occurred after the discharge. Because Griffin Park did not violate the stay as a matter of law, the trial court erred in granting Mr. King's motion for partial summary judgment and in denying the relief that Griffin Park had requested. And so, if there are no further questions.
Do you not also argue that this property, it's not even property of the estate because of the exemption that they claimed?
Your Honor, again, with respect to bankruptcy and when something is or is not a part of the bankruptcy estate, Mr. King argued that the property fell out of the bankruptcy estate sometime before the discharge order. Honestly, my expertise is so limited with respect to bankruptcy, I couldn't answer that question definitively for you, but I do think that the relevant time period is the end of the stay, which is the discharge order. But either way, Griffin Park's actions occurred after both in terms of enforcement. And so it is for these reasons that we ask the court to reverse the trial court's judgment and render judgment in favor of Griffin Park. Thank you.
Good afternoon. John Hott and I represent Mr. King in this case, and I'd like to start off by first addressing what seems to be a real confusion in this case, and that is counsel for Griffin Park keeps talking about the 2001 assessment lien, and they're the ones that first started using that term. We didn't start using that term. And we would concede that there was a lien that was filed and put on record in 2001, incidentally, before the Griffin Park Homeowners Association was even established. However, in their own document, in the declaration that they file on page 13, is another lien that arises under section 509 subsection B, and I believe it's on page 220 of the court's record. It says, and it's talking about a delinquency. Subsection A talks about the delinquency once you've received your notice, which is the document that this whole case hangs on. Once you've received your notice, it tells you how much you owe and when it's due. And in this case, it was due on January the 1st. Subsection A talks about that delinquency. Subsection B talks about the lien. It says the unpaid amount of any assessment, that would be the assessment that was made by way of the notice in sometime between November, late November, early December, the unpaid amount of any assessment not paid by the delinquency date is and shall be, together with the interest thereon, as provided in section 509A hereof, and the cost of collection thereof, including reasonable attorney's fees, a continuing debt secured by, and there is hereby impressed upon and created upon each lot a lien. So that lien is impressed and created on that lot as a result of the non-payment of the assessment. The assessment made in late 2015 would have been due January the 1st of 2016, and that delinquency would have arisen on January the 2nd of 2016. And it's our argument that that was when that lien, particular lien on the property, arose. Even if that's not the way this court sees it, what Griffin Park had to do, and this was part of their obligation under their declaration for the Homeowners Association, was they had to send out the assessment that caused somebody to have to pay the money in the first place. Otherwise, they don't get to step two, which is the notice which came out on January the 14th of 2016, and they can't later move to a foreclosure. And that's the other thing. They have two options when they enter into this. They can either move against the person individually, which they did not do in this case, or they can move against the property to foreclose on it. Now, we've talked a lot about bankruptcy, and I'm no expert on bankruptcy, but I know what I know. And in 362A4, it says that they're prohibited from taking any act to create, perfect, or enforce any lien against the property of the estate. So whether we're talking about a lien which arose on January 2nd of 2016, or the lien which was filed back in 2001, they couldn't get to steps 3 and 4 of the process of foreclosure without sending the notices during that period when the real estate was in the bankruptcy estate. Now, counsel cites a number of cases, Beter and Zamora, as cases standing for the idea that, you know, this is post-petition and so it really doesn't matter anyway and we can still do things. All of those cases deal with personal liability. None of those cases deal with an action against the actual property of the estate. And, of course, in their infinite wisdom in the bankruptcy code, they go to great lengths to protect the estate because that's the only thing they're going to have to work with as they move forward in the bankruptcy. And that's why this is different from a personal liability. This was an assessment that was made after the bankruptcy petition was filed on November the 3rd, 2015. But it was an action specifically against the lot, the dirt that was included in the petition. And that's why Section 362A4 prohibits them from taking any act.
Okay, now, even if we assume that sending out the notice or the assessment violated the stay, how do you jump to the conclusion then that the lien is void?
Because if the notice is void, and it is under the bankruptcy statute, it's void from its inception, ab initio. It never even got any traction. According to the terms of their own document here, there had to be a notice sent to tell the homeowner when and how much was due before there was a delinquency. And so by definition, they can't get to those other steps without that. So if that's missing...
What's the authority for the assessment itself being void? I understand that, I understand that your argument that they may have violated the stay. I'm not saying I agree with it, but I understand the argument. And certainly that would subject them to some kind of contempt action, But how do you, where's the authority that says that is just is void in abnitio?
Specifically, Your Honor, I've got to look for the code, the part of the code section, the bankruptcy code section that says that it is void. Not voidable, but it is a void action.
I get the perfecting of the lien is, and I understand that if they try to perfect a lien, that would be ineffective. But that's not exactly what they were doing here. They were just trying to collect. Assuming we agree with your argument, they were trying to enforce and collect a debt that maybe they shouldn't have. Maybe the state prevented them from doing. And I want to see the authority that says that is void. I understand that you try to perfect a lien during that you're not allowed to perfect during the stay, that would be void. That wouldn't be effective. But just a debt collection, it seems that is kind of it's a different little beast, because it's like if they had a debt that was subject to the bankruptcy estate, it was part of the bankruptcy estate, and I sent out a notice saying, hey, pay up. Voiding my notice doesn't make any sense. It's just it was a contemptuous act and it violated the stay. So that's why I want to know the passage that what you rely on to say that assessment itself is void.
Judge, I have to go back in here and thumb through and find that particular section in the code. And I think we cited it in our brief. I'd have to go back.
Well, I you may have, and I must have missed it, because I have a note here in the brief as I'm reading along. How do we get to the fact that it's void?
Are you arguing that they violated the stay by creating the lien or enforcing the lien?
No, by taking any act to enforce the lien.
But if you enforce the lien, doesn't that presume that the lien already exists?
It does, and our argument would be that as of January the 2nd, it did, but in order to cause it to come into, you know, existence on that day, they had to take the other step back in late 2015 to send the assessment out to let the homeowner know how much and when to pay the assessment. Otherwise, they don't take the next several steps that they outline in their own declaration in order to be able to enforce a lien.
So I'm understanding your argument then is to say that if there are necessary steps that must be taken for that lien to come into effect, or for them to be able to enforce the lien, if they do any of those necessary steps during that period of automatic stay, that's violating the stay, any necessary prerequisite, that violates the stay in your mind. And anything they do to try to the requisite steps are void.
That's correct.
Okay.
And the funny thing in this case is, I don't know, it's funny, odd, is as of January the 10th, this property was no longer a part of the bankruptcy estate. And they could have just waited a little bit longer, sent out another notice, and never missed a beat in this process. Because if that original assessment notice was not valid or is void, then they would have to do it again. But they would still have plenty of time. There's still plenty of protection in place for them to do it. They just can't do it while that property is part of the bankruptcy estate. And that's really that's our whole argument in a nutshell.
But you agree, whatever kind of interest it is, there was something called a lien that was created on the time of the filing of the declaration in 2001?
Yeah, I don't object to that at all, Your Honor. And again, I don't think that affects our case one way or the other. I guess I'd have to think about it a little bit more. But assuming, even for the sake of argument, that I assume that the lien was created in 2001, they still can't get to enforcement in 2016 without taking those necessary steps, again, that they outline in their declaration in order to enforce that lien. So whether it's created in 2016 or whether it's created in 2001, the sending out of that notice is a necessary step. It's a necessary step, not sufficient, not complete all by itself, but it's a necessary step in the process to get them to where they can foreclose on that property, and that was the remedy they chose in this case.
Since I asked her the question, I'll ask you to be equally unfair Does 362B3 have any impact on this case?
I don't believe it does. And I was looking at that when you mentioned it. My initial response is I don't believe it does.
Okay.
But I'd have to go back and take a longer look at that. And just one other thing. I recognize they've cited the Thurman case, and I wanted to make sure that I touched on this before I wrapped up. And I know I'm going to give a fair bit of time back to you this afternoon. But the Thurman case is a tax case, and it is distinguishable on a number of different bases in that in those tax cases, whether the homeowner gets the notice or doesn't get the notice is immaterial. That tax is due by operation of something else going on. That's a public matter. That's a matter of statute. That's a matter of law. The homeowners association contract is a private agreement between the homeowners and the organization themselves. They set up all the terms for how this was going to operate and how they were going to enforce the duties that are set forth under this declaration.
Let me ask you something. What about Mr. King's electric bill? Because when you sign up for electricity, you agree to a contract and you agree to pay it back, and I would assume that there might be some language that creates a lien or some sort of enforceable security. What if Mr. King got an electric bill during the time that he was under the bankruptcy stay? Would that be void?
Well,
why is that example different from this case?
It's different from this case because whether he gets that bill and they just void that bill, they can send another one out later on. It has no impact on the underlying debt in that case. The electric company can just wait if there's some kind of a lien against the property and they are actually moving against the property, then they could just wait till that property comes back out of the estate, which would happen in the case of a homestead property or a property that's otherwise exempt.
But isn't there a certain analogy between this situation and the tax cases? In the tax cases, you have a mechanism in place, a lien that exists, and you're simply adding the debt. By notifying the party, you're adding the debt, and I don't even know what word I'm trying to come up with here, but basically provides the debt to support the underlying lien. Doesn't the declaration provide the same kind of mechanism here? You already have a lien in place, and simply notice of the assessment is providing a basis for the underlying lien that already exists by virtue of the declarations.
Except that in the tax case, the assessment, again, is an automatic assessment that you're going to owe that assessment no matter what. And they're still going to be able to move against the property whether you get the notice or don't get the notice. It doesn't matter. In this case, the notice is actually, by their own terms, built in as a necessary step in the process getting us to a foreclosure. And that's the essential difference here. And again, I go right back to the thing I said just a few minutes ago. If they had sent that out during the stay, and then the bankruptcy court says, I'm sorry, that's a void act, then they had waited till the property comes out of the bankruptcy estate, sent another assessment out, they could have proceeded on January the 11th. I think I've got that date right. But let's assume January 11th is the day that property comes out of the bankruptcy estate. They could have sent that assessment then and proceeded on without a hiccup. It just moved right on. So it wasn't an onerous thing for them to cause that to be void. It was only onerous because they ignored it and just proceeded on without it. And that's really why we're here today. So if there are no other questions.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Chief Justice Sutter, if you asked, what's the authority that's sending the assessment, notice of the assessment is void? And there is none. Mr. King has not cited, Mr. Houghton on his behalf, has not cited a single case that stands for the proposition that sending a post-petition notice of a post-petition debt after a bankruptcy is filed for, you know, a non-dischargeable post-petition debt violates the stay. And he can't.
Well, even if it did violate the stay, is it void? That's what I want to know.
The only way it would be void is if it violated the stay.
Right, but let's assume it did violate the stay for a moment. What's the recourse at that point? Is it a contempt action, or is it voided? It seems to me a notice, I understand voiding a lien, I understand voiding certain things, but how do you void a notice?
I suppose what...
And is that the proper remedy under the bankruptcy code, to void it? Or is it just to declare someone in contempt of court, in contempt of the violation, in violation of the stay?
Contempt proceedings are certainly authorized under the bankruptcy code. There's no evidence that they were sought here by Mr. King during the bankruptcy. When you're talking about a post-petition debt, the idea that when we know that the assessment liens by an association are a non-dischargeable debt, the idea that they would be voided because they were the bill was sent for them during the automatic stay just doesn't square. How can they be a non-dischargeable post-petition debt, but if you happen to ask for them, you happen to make that assessment during the stay, you're out of luck as the association. And I would just point...
But creating a lien for a post-petition debt violates a stay.
I would agree with that, and I would point the court to... There is one lien here. There is one lien set forth in Section 5 of the declarations. It is the assessment lien that that was created and runs with the land as long as the covenants are in force and effect. The amount of that lien, the value of that lien, changes if there is an indebtedness and a delinquency. And the covenants spell that out. The covenants do spell out also that the association has an obligation for the benefit of the entire community to make these annual assessments. Mr. King is suggesting, sort of as a matter of course, that associations, I assume, look at the bankruptcy rolls to see if any of their residents happen to have filed for bankruptcy before they tell everybody in the community that they have annual assessments due. To me, and we've got some of that public policy argument addressed in our brief, I think that you're asking too much of the association when, you know, really what they're obligated to do is make the assessment, let everyone know, and Mr. King could have paid or not paid. The fact that he didn't pay meant that indebtedness became part of the 2001 assessment lien that already existed on the property. No action to enforce that lien, no action to get at the association security interest, happened until well after he had been discharged from bankruptcy.
But you're not making the argument that your case turns on the fact that you didn't have notice of the bankruptcy. It looked like in the summary judgment record you did have notice of the bankruptcy.
No, Your Honor, I'm not suggesting that our argument turns at all on notice. I am suggesting there are broader implications with respect to assessment liens the court ought to consider here. And it's for those reasons, again, that we ask the court to reverse and render judgment for the association. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your argument. It's been very helpful. The case has been submitted.